Chapter 33. Davin's anxiety grew at every setting of the sun on the long journey northward. For 6 days they marched north at a blistering pace, keeping to the backcountry wildlands. The evening before they had passed Windgate, the northernmost town of Bittermarch, a place more lonely and forsaken than Frostbourne. Windgate supported the only industry possible in the High Plains, ice mining. The place was a hive of rogues and a nest of squalor, and his Aua Catan captors steered clear of the city proper and its many clusters of rotting shacks where the itinerant workers passed their evenings. Davin's nose twitched in disgust at the smells carried to him on the wind, odours of decay, tar and alcohol that mixed with strands of grey smoke issuing from coal braziers. The unforgiving rocky foothills of the northern edge of the Icefire Mountains provided plenty of places to scrabble by unseen, though the terrain sported little foliage other than sparse clumps of hardy junipers that had survived the brutal wasting wind in wintertime. The hard ground and arid summer climate forced the grass to search out low boles and shady cracks to find purchase for their roots. That morning, they stopped briefly by a gurgling brook issuing from a steep canyon ahead of them. The red granite peaks of the Icefire Mountains gashed into the sky, though this far north a permanent cap of ice and snow clung to their steep declines. The shape of the soaring rock was rough-hewn, like a great axe had cut down at angles, creating near-vertical slopes and irregular fissures that gave the impression of a work just beginning. Within the steep canyons and along any forgiving slope, fir trees grew in close communion, one with another, roots straining into the creeks that trickled down from what water the sun could liberate from the glacial fields. A chill wind blew down the canyon and into Davin's face, bringing with it the clean breath of pristine air that had always calmed him, invigorated his muscles and cleared his mind. The raw, feral vista confirmed that they had left civilization far behind them, but the pleasant scene couldn't calm his heart. Ariane. He felt like he had abandoned her, that he should have tried harder to slip away and return to her side. He had no idea what the Aua Catan wanted with him, or why it mattered so much whether he was Kodokim or not. Ariane Hightower needed his help now, and he got farther from her with every step. Ki walked over to him and leaned on her spear. Davin had nearly accustomed himself to their form-fitting leathers and scanty jerkins. Her ice-blue eyes regarded him for a moment.
"I see that you are losing the war today, brown man," she said.
"How do you mean? What war?"
"Remember the reading I gave you," she prompted.
"Yes?"
"Your war is loneliness," she said. "You are losing today."
And Davin looked away. He didn't think she had the right of it. The war was a need to help Ariane escape false accusation and imprisonment. Though if he were honest with himself, he missed the gentle Lady Hightower a great deal. "Why do people always ask you what the war of others is?"
"It is my gift," she said.
"From primal air. That's the leaf mark on your palms." He had reasoned this out earlier.
"Yes."
"So it is a discernment of people's character?" She shifted her weight, and Davin tried to ignore the shapes her body made when she did so. Such scandalous clothing.
"I sense what a person values, and I see their war. The Aua Catan believe that everyone has a war. It is necessary."
"Why?" Davin asked.
"Everyone is given a war so that they may struggle, so they may conquer or be conquered. Even if one is weak in the world, he may be mighty in his heart. Without the war, there could be no strength, no conviction, no honor."
Davin nodded. "An interesting concept. And what strength would a victory against loneliness give me? What conviction?" Key smiled.
"Love, brown man. A love that fills. A love that is given on the one hand but restored on the other."
She paused for a moment.
"I do have a question for you. What is your gift from the primal fire? Is it something to do with the carving you do every night? I've never seen anyone who can do it so quickly."
He ran his fingers through his hair and looked away for a moment. Had she, too, sensed that he had made something for her and her sister? The wood had called to him the first night they encamped inside the royal wood after his capture.
"Yes," he replied. "I see shapes in the wood, and the gift helps me carve them, and I know who they are for."
She
She nodded as if this was unsurprising. The primal heir has gifted several people in our village with skills at crafting, everything from bones to boats to leather. My carvings come alive. Her eyebrows raised. Really? Now that is a new thing, brown man. Do you have something for me?
She does now.
Yes, and your sister.
Now?
He opened his bag.
Yes.
Her smile widened. Ta, come! The brown man has a gift for us. Ta, never very far from her sister, walked over, a bemused look on her face.
Is it one of his carvings?
I saw him working on them. Key nodded. Davin reached into his bag and pulled them out, a pair of identical snowfinches. While not painted white as he would have liked to have done, they were intricate and lifelike down to the individual striations on the feathers. They reached for them, but Davin pulled them back.
Wait, I want you to command them to come to you.
What? Tar asked, face perplexed.
He says his carvings are alive, Key explained.
Davin extended his hands, one bird on top of each.
Extend your palms.
Now send your thoughts to the bird. Command it to come to you. Key got the hang of it first, her bird bursting to life and hopping from Davin's hand to hers. Tars followed close after. As the saber cat carving had done for Elaine, these gifts brought wonderment and joy to the twins' faces, and before long they had the birds flying in low circles around the camp and perching on their shoulders.
Thank you, brown man,
Key called back distractedly, as she and her sisters provided demonstrations for the rest of their family.
Perhaps we should bond him, Tar said.
Key giggled in response.
Maybe we should.
Davin had no idea what they meant and didn't feel inclined to inquire further. Jujal, grinning ear to ear, strode over.
That is an interesting gift from the primal fire. Quite a delight for my daughters. I thank you. They can be a rather grim pair, and it warms me to see them smile. But I do come to tell you something you may not wish to hear. We are near my home. We will see it before evening.
That is a relief, Davin said, heart easing at the news. How long will you keep me?
Not long, I think, Jujal answered vaguely. But the entrance to Jungkal is hidden, a secret place we found during the days of that demon Cretus and his purges. You are not Awakatan, and will be the first outsider we have brought to Jungkal in ages. I must ask you to go blindfolded.
If it will bring me closer to my release, then I will agree.
Thank you, Jujal said. I mean you no dishonor.
None taken.
Lead on.
Jujal beckoned to his daughter Key and assigned her the task of tying a soft piece of well-worked hide over his eyes, plunging him into darkness. She placed the end of her spear in his hand.
Hold to this. I'll try to keep you upright.
The arrangement kept the pace slow as the terrain roughened, Davin stumbling on unseen rocks and rolling his feet on roots and fallen branches.
Try not to find every one, brown man, Key admonished.
Without his sight, Davin absorbed the sounds around him. They crossed a shallow, gurgling creek twice, slippery rocks nearly sending him into the bitterly cold glacial water. As they penetrated deeper into the trees, the shadows brought a new chill, but also an explosion of birdsong. The scent of fir was so strong it stung his sensitive nose. The air continued to cool as they ascended, his hike smoother as they stuck to a switchbacking trail that continued steeply upward. They stopped to eat, Key placing food in his hand, unwilling to risk removing his blindfold. He wanted to rip it off, and not just for his own safety. He longed to see what views their hike afforded, the explorer within him hungry for a feast of new sights. After the meal, his stumbling journey took him over a talus field that twisted his ankle more than once, past waterfalls that misted his face, and up steep inclines that required him to scrabble on three limbs while holding to Key's spear. The temperature dipped as the sun fell and became colder still as they passed through an opening that robbed the sun of its strength completely. A breeze carried the cold of winter with it, stealing through his coat to bump his skin.
We will take the blindfold off now, Key informed him. I hope you are not afraid of high places.
Davin blinked as the leather fell away from his eyes. Even though the light was weak, it took a moment to adjust his eyes to his environment. Behind him, a wall of blue ice rose into the air, a small wedge-shaped crack providing them entrance to a cavern that comfortably fit them all. In front of him, a red granite cliff shot up 50 feet, the wall of ice curving to meet the wall of stone at the top. The ice had the appearance of a frozen waterfall. Near the top of the high ceiling, a cave entrance waited, a crack twice as high as a man and twice as wide. The Aoa Katan had chiselled hand and footholds into the granite that led up to the crack, though even with those helps, the climb seemed treacherous. As Davin watched, one of Judal's sons started his ascent, a climb clearly familiar to him as he confidently worked his way up. So self-assured in their skill were they that they did not wait for the first person to clear before more joined to climb. Davin went after Ki, followed by Ta and Jujal.
"Always look up," Ki cautioned him, though looking up only afforded him a view of her backside.
Despite the chill, they still hadn't layered on any more clothing.
"Aren't you cold?" he asked.
"We are children of the north," Ki answered. "We are a bit heartier than you Southlanders."
The rough granite provided plenty of purchase for his fingers, though the narrow slots were not suited to the thick toe of his bulky boots. He found himself balancing on the narrow tips as he pushed himself up. He had enough slips that Tar backed down, probably fearing an errant boot might find her face. Ki helped pull him up and into the cave. While dark, a soft light leaked into the cave from just around a bend and provided enough illumination to traverse it comfortably. The entire cavern was little more than a crack in a granite wall, narrowing enough to force them to walk sideways for a short distance. At the end it widened, opening to the beautiful pearl pinks and purple blues of an evening sky. Junkal stretched before him, taking his breath for a moment. They stood on a broad shelf overlooking a forested bowl nestled at the base of the ice-capped daggers of the Icefire Mountains. A blue lake, the colour of the Aoa Katan's eyes, dominated the centre of the bowl, fed by melting ice. And then he saw the source of the glowing blue moss. It ringed the shore of the lake, glowing weakly in the evening light. At night it would shine. He made a note to grab some before he left. Slender arms of the lake shot into the forest, and huts formed of bones, draped with furs, lined the shores and hid amid the slender pines. While not an elder wood, the thin trunks of the fir trees shot high into the air and swayed in an evening breeze warmer than Davin would have expected. The shelf in front of them dropped nearly 200 feet to the valley floor, where a large wooden lodge backed against the cliff edge. The long building was formed by leaning logs against a centre beam and packing the spaces between the timber with daub. The Aoa Katan had cleared the wood in a wide circle in front of the building, a deep fire pit in the centre big enough to host a bonfire. Totems of bone and wood surrounded the area, and well-worn paths snaked away from this gathering place to create various avenues in the woods. White-haired women and bald men milled about, and families had gathered near their huts. The smoke from several fires blanketed the forest with haze, tendrils drifting out of the wood to hover above the water.
"What do you think, brown man?" Ki asked, leaning on her spear. "Do you miss your cobbled streets and houses so big one could get lost in them?"
Davin regarded her, finding her eyes teasing.
"It is a beautiful place," he commented truthfully. The primitive simplicity of the scene spoke to his heart. "Though a warm meal and a warm bed do sound appealing at the end of a long journey."
"Come," Ki beckoned, "while not your Belshire, you will find that Junkal is not without its comforts."
Their party left, walking along the shelf as it descended to a rocky talus field where a path had been cleared among the rock. After this, they switchbacked through the woods until they emerged at the clearing in front of the lodge. Jujal called to Ki and Ta.
"I go to speak with the Ekor and the Tamak. Prepare him. My sons, keep the people from him."
Ta sauntered over, a grin on her face.
"What my father and Ki have likely neglected to tell you is that we kill outsiders. Amusing how we left that detail out, isn't it?"
Her tone was teasing, but her sister nodded in agreement.
"Yes, but don't fear, brown man. If you are Kodokim, you will be afforded your place here."
"How will they know if I am or not?" he asked, feeling nervous.
"It is simple," Ki answered. "You will go to the Seeing Wall. All Tamalukan do."
"Tamalukan?"
one chosen to represent the primal force, like your Lord Ember. If you truly have been chosen by the primal beast and are Kodokim, you will be welcome here, as Lord Ember would be if he cared to come.
And if I'm not? Tar fielded this question, leaning in close to his ear.
Then you will freeze to death at the Seeing War.
I should have tried harder to escape, he thought. People gathered around the clearing, bald boys and men, white-haired women and girls. While curiosity and wonder at the stranger played on their lips, a suspicious hostility lingered in their eyes. More than one of the men had his eye on Davin's rifle, and he gripped it tightly. Jujal's sons surrounded him, motioning for the Gorkas to stay back. "Have you discovered any of the other primal forces, besides air?" Davin asked, keeping an eye on the crowd.
"No," Ki responded. "Only fire and air are known to us. We seek the others."
A man emerged from the lodge, tall and shirtless. A multitude of necklaces hung about his neck, each strung with bone carvings of runes, people, and animals. He was older, crow's feet fanning away from the corners of his eyes, but his frame still held power. His ice-blue eyes burned with anger as he regarded Davin, a single obsidian blade clutched in his hand. Jujal walked at his side, speaking animatedly, but whatever he said did not dissipate the fury in the man's eyes. Behind him came a woman, also of older mien. She too was weighed down with many of the same kinds of necklaces. Like all the women, she wore a jerkin, but a white fur stole hung about her shoulders, as did a leather thong with two pouches on each end dangling about. Ki leaned in.
"The man is Akor, what you might call a king or a war leader. The woman is our Tamak, a queen or priestess. I caution you to be very calm. The Akor is an angry man and does not brook weakness. Stand firm."
The Akor was taller than he first appeared, even taller than Davin himself. Davin steeled himself and met the indignant gaze of the approaching Akor without flinching. The bone trinkets tinkled against each other as they swayed from the motion of the Akor's determined stride. Davin tried not to focus on the wicked-looking dagger gripped in his palm. Without fear or hesitation, the Akor stood toe-to-toe with Davin, eyes bearing down as if to yank out his soul and hold it up for inspection.
"You read this, foreigner?"
the Akor said, directing his question to Ki but keeping his eyes on Davin.
"I did. He is a man of honor."
"Are you sure?"
the Akor said, eyes pegged to Davin's.
"Is your judgment clouded, perhaps, by the gifts your father has taught me of?"
"I read him before I knew of his gifts."
The Akor retreated a step.
"Show me, spear sisters, that I may believe."
The two women produced the carvings from their backpacks and let them fly, much to the astonishment of the onlookers. Davin relaxed for a moment as the Akor's dour face briefly shared in the wonderment. But without waiting for Tar and Ki to finish their demonstration, he stepped forward and with a quick slice of his dagger, ripped Davin's shirt from the collar to his belt. Instinctively, Davin dropped his rifle and pulled his sabercat knives. Jujal interposed himself between the two men who stared a silent challenge at one another.
"He only wishes to see the mark, Davin," Jujal soothed. "Who gave him the daggers?"
the Akor hissed.
"A trade for the carvings, perhaps?"
"He fashioned them," Ki answered.
"Lies!"
Akor spat.
"The bitter Marchians and Cretesians care nothing for wood or sacred bone. They prefer their metal and their rifles."
"I made them after a hunt," Davin asserted. "It is a craft I learned as a youth." He spun the daggers, pointing them hilt first at the Akor. "You can have them, if it pleases you." The Akor kept his eyes on him, but returned his own obsidian dagger to his belt.
"Keep your daggers," he said, "and show me the mark."
Davin twirled his daggers and resheathed them, his dexterous movements eliciting appreciative nods from the crowd. Ki winked at him, a bare grin on her lips. Davin opened his ruined shirt. The Tamak joined the Akor, inspecting the scars.
"Tell them, Davin, how you came by the scars," Jujal prompted.
Under the enthralled gaze of the Aur Katan,
Davin recounted the tale of his misadventure while hunting the saber cat. Everyone nearby kept craning their necks to get a look at his chest. When Davin finished, the Acor frowned more deeply than before.
I cannot believe that a Kodor would return and not choose one of the Snowborn to be her servant. The Kai will take this man to the Seeing Wall tomorrow. We will let the ice have its way with this outlander, and see then if Kodor would choose such a man to be her Tamalo Khan. Jojal, remove his weapons from him and place him under guard tonight. Your family has custody of him until morning. If you take pity on him and he escapes, one of your children will be held as a death debt until he is either killed or captured. Do you understand?
Yes, Acor, Jojal said.
Then remove him! Light the park fire.
The Acor and Tamak walked back toward the lodge while a fire was lit in the large pit in the center of the clearing. Davin shook his head, eyeing the crack in the canyon wall above the lodge, the one he had passed through to enter the primitive valley. It was hard to see with the deepening of evening, but he had half a mind to find out if any of the Aur Catan warriors could catch him if he made a break for it. Judging by their long legs and defined musculature, he calculated they could run him down with ease. Jujal collected his rifle and put out his hands for the daggers.
I mean no disrespect, Davin. I am sorry the Acor has seen fit to treat you as a prisoner. I did not foresee his anger. He has no love for outsiders. But I thought that the possibility of finding Kodor Kim would sway him to show more hospitality.
Davin placed his daggers in Jujal's hand. I want these back.
And you shall have them.
Come, brown man, Key said. Our family lodgings are not far.
The family encircled him to keep the throng from him, leading the way out of the gathering place, the park, Key explained, and out onto a winding pathway through the trees. Travelling to the lodgings of Jujal took them halfway around the lake, where they found a series of five huts made from draping hides over a conglomeration of wood and bone, tied and bent into a tight frame. The huts bunched around a small clearing, the family park, and Jujal ordered his sons to start a fire. A log with a top and bottom shaved flat served as a bench, and Davin sat down, Ta and Ki flanking him. Ta reached up and pulled at his hair.
It is so odd to see a man with hair, she said, giving it a tug as if to prove its authenticity. And on his face too, Ki said, rubbing his beard.
Please, ladies, they laughed.
Ladies, Ki exclaimed. We are not your painted ladies with their frilly, useless dresses.
I've noticed. You've seen them, then?
From a distance, Ta said. Though I do wonder how they keep their clothes out of the fire.
Ki nodded.
And who is your painted lady, brown man? Or are you poor and love a woman who cannot pay to make her face into another?
I have no lady, he said.
Now, if you would— You lie, Ki said. You forget that I took your breath into me. You breathe her in and out with every rise and fall of your chest.
I have no commitment with anyone, Davin amended.
You have not bonded her? Ta asked.
Davin had suspicions about what that meant. We are not married, nor are we engaged to be so. The fire started to lick the branches, casting a healthy orange glow on the faces of his two companions, their eyes eager and absorbing.
Tell us of these rituals, brown man, Key prompted.
Davin exhaled. He had nothing better to do. While he explained the intricacies of courtship, engagement, and marriage, their expressions evolved from interested to surprised to horrified.
And so, if you wanted to marry this woman you love, you would ask permission of the father unless you feel he will object, in which case you— What was the word? Lope?
Elope. Davin said, though it is generally frowned upon. Ta and Ki exchanged a look and then burst out laughing.
We are sorry to mock you, Ki said, but it is such a terrible mess. You bring your woman here, then you can just bond her and be done.
What does that mean? Davin asked, afraid of what she might say.
Bondings happen on the first snowfall, Ki explained. Those who wish to share a tent together do so on that night, and they are bonded. Parents have no say in the matter.
Davin had to admit that the simplicity of it was appealing, given his present circumstances, but it did lack that air of celebration and ritual that would memorialize it.
Are either of you bonded? Davin asked.
Tar frowned.
No, we are spear sisters. That means that whatever man wants to bond with one of us must bond with both of us. And we will not bond with a man until he can tell us apart.
I see, Davin said. Odd indeed. He decided not to bring up that he knew how to sort them out. But I must ask you, the Acor mentioned that I am to go to the Seeing Wall with the Kai. What does any of that mean?
Ki stood, extending her hands toward the nascent fire.
Whenever a primal force chooses someone to be a Tamalo Khan, they are taken to the Seeing Wall where they are tested. We do not know what happens. Only my father, who is the Tamalo Khan of Primal Air, has undergone it in our lifetime. The Kai and Acor will take you there.
Kai?
There is one Kai for each of the primal forces. Only my father actually has the right to represent a primal force, but until the others are found or are within our grasp, three others stand in place as Kai until there are true Tamal Ukan to represent fire, water, and earth. If you are truly Kodo Khim, then you will be the Tamal Ukan over the primal beast.
And the Acor will have to accept you, Tar added.
Davin's mind swam with all the new terms, finding he didn't want to learn them. He wanted to get up and leave immediately, get back to Arianne and punish those who wanted to hurt her. He itched to do it. Ki returned and sat at his side as the fire grew full enough to wash its heat over them, casting its orange blush on the branches all around them. A warm exhaustion pulled at his tired mind and eyelids as the heat grew. Two of Judal's sons approached with a spit punched through the carcass of several large rabbits. In minutes, a savory smell called to his famished nostrils. The meat hissed, grease dripping into the fire, the smell watering his mouth. Hunger from the long march gnawed at him. His two companions played with their bird carvings, sending them diving at their brothers and laughing at the result of their pranks. Footsteps behind them turned them all around. A grave-faced Acor, two men, and an older woman plied the trail to Jujal's huts.
Where is Jujal?
The Acor asked of one of the brothers.
I am here,
Jujal answered, emerging from his tent.
Get the outsider up, the Acor said. We go to the Seeing Wall now.
Now?
Jujal returned in surprise.
As I said, we cannot risk the contamination of this outsider a moment longer. I and the rest of the Kai agree on this point. We go. He will face his destiny, or his doom.